Welcome to The Odyssey, a podcast by and about Mesa County Libraries. My name is David.
And I'm Bethany.
This segment is brought to you by the Information Services Department. Stop by the Central Library to talk to one of our knowledgeable staff members. They offer many services that help you get the most out of your library experience. If they don't know it, it's not worth knowing. Today we are talking with Adam Lopez, our studio coordinator at the 970 West Studio at Mesa County Libraries. And Adam, how's it going today?
Good, man. How you doing today, Bethany? How you doing?
Good. It's a little weird to have you in the room with us.
Right.
But I'm enjoying it.
That's right. So Adam is the ghosted producer that is always referred to on the show, but never actually seen. But now we're actually
heard.
Talking.
He's like hanging out over in the control room.
It's right.
Quiet.
And then you don't have to listen to Dave and I babble.
Well, I can work on emails and do other random stuff.
Right, you're just going to shake your head. I'm cutting that out later.
I'll be cutting that later. Yeah, no. No, you guys have been doing great with this thing, man. I'm really excited to see how it hopefully catches some good traction.
Thanks.
Me too.
So Adam is our studio coordinator. What does that even mean, man?
Sometimes I don't even know, man. No. Now, studio coordinator, you know, I'm over here at 970 West most of the time. So I'm helping develop, some of the projects we work on, studio lounge, other things like that. I developed all the audio classes, teach the audio classes. Dave helps me teach the audio classes.
Yep.
Mainly monitoring reservations a lot of times. You know, patrons can come in and use the facility to create their own projects. So we're always here to kind of help with that technical support, make sure that everything's operating properly for them.
Yeah, so you have a pretty long history in audio recording, right?
Yeah, I've been doing this for a while.
Yeah, how'd you get started in audio recording?
I just kind of really enjoyed watching engineers work. I, you know, went and recorded a demo with one of my bands when I was young, and I was just like, I really like, you know, the guy on the other side of the glass, so to speak. So
more so than actually playing.
Yeah, I realized I was kind of a not great musician. So I was like, I'll just learn how to push all those buttons.
Or like, so I play in a band as well. And every time that we've gone and recorded, I always think the same thing. Like my skills as a musician are very limited. Like, it's almost more fun just to be the guy recording it and then kind of turning that into its own little art form as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is. You know, when you get to mix something, that's when you get to kind of add your flavor to the song, so to speak. And kind of get it to the finish line.
So I know that you went to school in Phoenix, right?
Yeah, I went to the Conservatory of Recording Arts and Sciences down there in Phoenix. Cool program to go through, you know, really kind of just every day you're in the studio learning, working, you know, if it's either multi-track recording, live sound recording.
Yeah.
And then from there, went over to Los Angeles for a while, had my internship there, got hired on at the studio that I interned at.
Right. But you got the chance to work with some really cool musicians, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, I was studio runner. So most of the time when the big bands would come in, I was mainly getting coffee and things like that. But you know, you get to be in the room, you get to see all these guys work. So I was there during the whole Make Believe album, the Weezer Make Believe album. They tracked that whole album there. Nine Inch Nails came and did a couple songs. They had Dave Grohl playing drums on those tracks, so that was super cool to watch those guys work. Queens of the Stone Age came and did a couple songs.
Yeah. So after working in LA with, you know, super famous people, whatever.
Now you have to come work with Dave.
Now you have to come work right? in conjunction with Dave and Bethany on the podcast.
Yep, coming up. No, it's good, man. I grew up here. So it was kind of, it was good to go out there. Like I grew up here always thinking like, oh, I'm going to Hollywood. This is where I need to be. And then you get there and you're like,
never mind.
Not so much. So it's good to come home, you know, start my family here and.
Yeah, so I've been working in the studio since it was built and worked on it before it was built. And actually, I can say adding Adam to this place is like the best thing that's ever happened.
I bet.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. We couldn't do things like Studio Lounge, which is our local music recording and video project that is in the digital archive. We couldn't do that without Adam's help. Most of the classes we wouldn't be able to teach without Adam's help. So like, you've been so instrumental in like the success of this building.
Thank you.
It's awesome that you're here.
Yeah, thanks. I really enjoyed it.
It's
one of those things like you grow up here, this place would have been awesome, man, when we were kids. And now it's here at least. That's what's really cool and exciting about it is we do get to have this for the community. You know, the young folks can come in and get access to this kind of gear that you just don't really get to utilize.
They did. You did a teen podcast camp, right?
Yeah.
That was really cool because then you get to introduce the teens to this area and maybe to something they don't have any familiarity with because it's not offered in schools, especially in our school district just because of the cost. So I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, that was a really fun program. Really, we brought the kids in. It was just a like a one day kind of thing, but they came up with their topics. They did all the recording themselves, and they actually recorded music as their intro and outro stuff as well. So it was like
that's amazing.
This is amazing. They're like 14 to 17 year old kids just coming in and creating their own content. So that's really the beauty of this facility.
Definitely. And it's free to use.
Ah, yes.
Yes.
That's the best part.
There is some things that patrons need to do beforehand. Can you talk about those a little bit?
Yeah, so to use the space, you really just have to come to one of our orientation sessions. It takes about 30 to 45 minutes. We basically just kind of tell you about the building, what things you can do here in the facility, things you can't do in the facility, and then after that, you're eligible to start booking the space. So you do have to be a Mesa County resident to use the space, have a library card in good standings, which...
Know. And leave your vape pen in your car.
Yes, no vaping in the studio, guys. All right?
Not allowed.
Since that didn't really ever happen.
Well, now that you've said it.
Yeah, we had to put up signs to say no vaping.
For some reason, like vaping and audio recording go hand in hand. I don't know.
I guess.
It's like the millennial thing now.
Right.
And you can access the schedule for the orientations on our event calendar.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And you can see they're totally walk-in basis, so you don't need to schedule a time during that two-hour block. You just pop on in.
Right. So the orientations, if it says it's a start time, those ones will start at that specific time. We also offer what's called Studio Q&A, and that's on the second and fourth Wednesday of every month. So Q&A is a really cool thing. I don't think many people know about it. You can come and get an orientation during that time, but it's also time you can come get help with a project. You're working on a Photoshop project. We have a technician here that can help you work on your Photoshop, or you have an audio interface that won't talk to your computer. Bring it down and we'll help you kind of get it connected. So that's a great opportunity for the community to come in and get some help from our technicians, some one-on-one kind of assistance.
Yeah, so you can find those schedules on our website under the events calendar. We also have paper schedules that have that on there as well. Or you can always give us a call and we can give you that information as well.
Absolutely.
That's right. So you mentioned that you also teach audio classes. Let's talk a little bit about those. What do you got to do for an audio class? How do you get signed up?
Just like any of the other classes here at the library, you do sign up through the library's website. We do require registration. Most of our classes are very hands-on. So if you come take the audio mixing class or the audio editing class or the Photoshop class, you know, we get out the laptops. You actually get to get on the laptop and do some hands-on work.
And those are free as well. You just need free a library card.
Yep. The library card is your key.
Yes.
Yeah.
To everything.
We should mention that the audio classes are not required to book the space. Right. Mm-hmm. They just kind of help you get familiar with what's going on over here.
Yeah, it brings you up to speed. You know, if you're new to it, you know, you take the classes, and that's what we like to tell people. We're kind of teaching to be a cook and not a chef. You know, we're kind of giving you a recipe to follow, come in and get some simple stuff done. But yeah, if you've got it, even just a little bit of experience, you're more than welcome to take the orientation and just start booking sessions and learning as you go. Like, that's what's great to see the patrons come in. After three or four sessions, they know their exact setup. They know what they want to do. They can come in and get stuff done, and it's great to be able to help people in that way.
One of the classes I really like that's offered is the art digitization class. I think people probably don't know that we offer that sometimes, but if you're an artist, you can take our art digitization class and learn how to digitize your art so that you can have a digital file of it. Or say like my grandma painted a lot, I could totally digitize her paintings and keep those instead of having to have the actual painting, just because those take up some room. So yeah, it's super cool. That's offered on our website as well. You can look at the schedule for that too.
Yeah, it's great. If you've got something that's too big to go on a scanner, we can show you how to digitally put it in the digital world and make sure all the colors transfer properly.
Very cool. So Adam, you work over here a lot. What's one thing that you wish people knew more about the studio?
I think one of the things that I really wish people knew more about would probably be Studio Q&A. It's such a great time for people to come in, get personalized help with the stuff that they might not know how to do. Like, I helped a gentleman this morning. He came in. He had an old recording of his parents. They were just sitting around the kitchen table talking, but there was a lot of distortion in the background. Mm. So I was able to help him within 15 minutes, clean that up, bounce it down to an MP3, and, you know, he was super stoked on that.
Cool.
So I really think Q&A is a great opportunity for us to help the community on a one-on-one type of basis.
Mm-hmm. What's the coolest thing you've seen in the studio?
That's tough, man. There's a lot of cool stuff that happens.
He's like, yeah. I've worked with celebrities, so.
No, there's just so much cool stuff. I love just seeing people come in and just be excited about the facility, excited about what they can learn, what they can do. You know, we've got musicians coming in here doing all kinds of different genres of music. We have people creating meditation CDs to help their like patients sleep well at night. So basically anything you can think of, come down and let's see if we can help you do it.
One thing that I'm always surprised about with our studio is there are so many people who have really big ideas in Grand Junction, and they come in here and they use the space to try and make those happen. I'm talking about like local bands, local rappers. There are so many local rappers that I had no idea existed in this town. Mm-hmm. And you can see it when they come in, they're all like really excited to be in here and have mm-hmm. a space where they can actually do something that they're interested in.
Yeah, totally. It's great to have that opportunity for all the different types of artists here in town. It's whenever anybody comes in, they're always excited. Most people are very prepared and ready to come in and get to work.
Yeah.
Yep. For those who don't know, the studio is located next to the Central Library in downtown Grand Junction. It's between the Central Library and the Discovery Garden.
Right.
So it's right on the corner of 5th and Uray.
Yep.
And it's free. I just can't reiterate that enough.
Yeah,
if you have a library card, it is free.
Right.
Yeah, that's always great during orientation when you're giving people the spiel. They're like, okay, well, how much is this going to cost? And it's like, everything is, you know, free of charge here, just like any other library service. You know, if you break it, you do have to buy it.
So don't break it.
Yeah, don't break our guitars, please, or microphones.
No but, guitar smashes.
But no, it's an awesome place. It's a great thing for the community. You know, we're recording this podcast here. Hopefully this thing's going to be fun for the community.
May need to kick Dave out.
It's off to a shaky start.
We're going to have to get a new host. But no, it's good stuff, man.
Awesome. Cool. Well, great. Adam, thanks for joining us. Thanks for recording all these podcasts. Mm-hmm. We could have done it ourselves, but we probably wouldn't have.
You could have done it, and I would have just sat here and done nothing.
Right. It definitely wouldn't have been as good.
Yeah, thanks for editing us when we mess up all the time. And
my pleasure.
Yeah, hopefully you don't get tired of listening to our voices.
Nah, I enjoy doing this stuff. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, Adam.
This segment was brought to you by the 970 West Studio. Tap into your creativity at the 970 West Studio. Record a song, film a commercial, or take a picture of your artwork. Talk to a staff member to see how the 970 West Studio can bring your digital projects to life.
All right, welcome back on this segment of the show. We're going to be talking with Ike Rakeski. He's a librarian at Mesa County Libraries. Hey, Ike.
Hey, how's it going?
We're going to be talking about the Dolores Cave System, which apparently Ike has explored extensively.
So, yeah, it's actually just a single cave, but there's a number of other prehistoric sites around Dolores Cave within the same general vicinity.
And where is it located exactly?
It's in western Colorado.
Okay.
That's a pretty big region, I guess. Sort of. We like narrow it down a little bit.
South of Grand Junction, I would call it.
Okay. When I looked it up, I think it said Montrose County for.
Mm-hmm. It is. Yep, okay. It's in Montrose County.
So Dolores Cave, how did you discover this place?
I had first read about Dolores Cave. Local history and local prehistory have always been big interests of mine. And I think that I first read about Dolores Cave, it might have been online or in a book or magazine article or journal.
That'd be pretty apt for a librarian to find something in a book, right?
Yeah, I know, yeah.
Was it one of the items we have here in the library?
We do. We actually have a number of items downstairs in the Rashley Regional History Room that get into a little bit of, you know, the topic of Dolores Cave.
Very nice.
So the Dolores Cave, why should people care about this?
So
what's interesting about this?
Dolores Cave is a known prehistoric site and was actually excavated twice In 1946, C.T. Hurst excavated Dolores Cave. And then in 1994, Dr. Mark Steiger, who's a professor at Western Colorado University, re-excavated the cave. And what they were able to determine during the initial excavations is that the cave had been occupied from 600 BC to 1400 AD.
Wow.
And there's a couple, to me at least, a couple artifacts that were found that are just really, really fascinating. You know, and a lot of it, there's a lot of really cool archaeological sites in, you know, the Southwest. But Dolores Cave contained a couple artifacts that I thought were just really, really interesting. And, you know, not just the artifact itself, but also the story behind the artifact and what it meant. There were a couple items, and I'll talk about those. There was actually a piece of yucca basketry that was really, really unique in Dolores Cave. And it was similar to basketry that was found near the Fremont River in Utah in 1931 by another archaeologist named Noel Morse. And C.T. Hurst, who excavated in 1946, had found that the basketry was essentially the same design as what had been found in 1931. So I thought it was neat that you'd have that very similar basketry found, you know, in two different places that are, you know, roughly 100 miles away from each other.
So these baskets, are they Native American?
Yes.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Yep.
And do you know which tribe or people those came from?
So according to the initial radiocarbon dating, you know, the 600 BC to 1400 AD, it would have been the basket maker era up through the Pueblo periods of time. So it would have predated, you know, any Ute inhabitants.
Right.
Does any museum around have those baskets, or are they no longer?
You know, existing? As far as the baskets, I'm not sure. I know that some of the artifacts ended up at the National Monument, and I'm sure that our museum, the Museums of Western Colorado here in Grand Junction, have possibly some of those items.
Okay.
So the first item is the baskets.
Yep.
And then what was the second item?
So the second item was a split twig figurine. It's made of twigs, and it actually looks a lot like an animal, like sort of a deer or a sheep. And what was pretty cool was it was dated to 600 BC, and it was unique in that it was made a lot later, and it was found further to the east than other figurines of its type.
Wow. This is kind of blowing my mind a little bit right now.
And I mean, a lot of it, I just think the figurine, the split twig figurine, is unique because, yeah, it was really sort of an anomaly in that it was found where it was, and that it was found, or at least it was made during the time when it was, when compared with other items of that type.
And what I find crazy is that I've lived here all my life and I've never heard of this place before. So.
And I, you know, I wouldn't have found out about it until I was sort of like delving in deeper into the local archaeological work.
Yeah.
The third artifact I think is really, really cool. And this is what really made me, piqued my interest. They also found a medicine bundle. And the bundle consisted of a wooden knife, a small stone fetish, great horned owl feathers, and a deer skin with dew claws attached. The bundle was wrapped with a piece of yucca rope, and what C.T. Hurst had found, and this is actually what he said that while acknowledging that one idea was as good as another, Hurst and his colleagues gave the following interpretation of the item. They interpreted the item as being that the bundle was the prayer for the death of an important enemy on the part of the warrior who had buried it.
Okay, so what does that mean?
So... what they think was that a person, you know, could be male or female. There was a warrior who had been hoping for success in a battle or fight, had buried the bundle in prayers of killing the enemy.
Whoa.
Could you imagine doing that today?
No. I don't have any vendettas against anybody.
What would you even put in there now?
What's
their cell phone number or something? Yeah.
What's really cool is that they also gave another interpretation where they sort of built upon that. Said the owl flies silently, hence the feathers pray for silence. The deer runs swiftly, hence the skins pray for speed. The knife signifies death, and the rope the final consummation.
Wow.
And what's interesting on top of that is in Tabawatch Cave, which is located about 20 miles away from Dolores Cave. They found the same exact items that were in the Dolores Cave medicine bundle, but they were all buried separately.
Oh.
Instead of, one of the key differences is that instead of the wooden knife, like Dolores Cave, in the Tabawatch Cave, they found a sheathed stone blade. So that artifact really, I just found to be really, you know, interesting.
Right.
And the fact that they had came up with such an interesting interpretation. I mean, it would be very hard to prove that that's what that meant. But to me, it makes a lot of sense.
Is the Tabawatch one, was it found after the Dolores Cave one?
C.T. Hurst excavated Tabawatch before Dolores Cave.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. And there's actually two Tabawatch caves.
Oh, interesting.
And like I said, in the same, 20 miles away approximately.
Okay. So we've got three items. We've got the basket, the figurine, and then the medicine bundle thing. Are those all from the same people and same time period, or are those spread out?
It'd be hard. I mean, it was definitely the radiocarbon dating indicated that it was basket maker to Pueblo. I don't know. I've never read up on them assigning the specific artifacts to those groups, but it would have fallen within that range.
Okay. So like the same general time period, basically.
Yeah.
The other question is, how big is this cave? Like most caves I've been in, like I'm a chicken, so I'm only walking in like 10 feet or something like that. Were all these pieces just like right next to each other, or is this like a giant cave?
They were buried. During the two excavations, they dug down quite a bit. And the cave, I've actually been there a couple times. The cave is maybe, I don't know, it's not super big. You could possibly fit, I don't know, a Volkswagen Bug inside the cave.
That's barely. It? Wow.
A little bit bigger than that, but you know, definitely not a huge space.
Okay, so if somebody is listening to this podcast and they're interested in these caves, can you explore these? Are these protected sites, or is this public?
They're protected in that the way that not many people know about them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you'd really have to do some in-depth work as far as figuring out where they are.
So for example, you would have to come down to the Central Library Regional History Room and do your own research possibly?
You could get some information. One thing that I always try to keep in mind though is that, you know, these sites need to be preserved as cultural resources. You would hate to have something like a lot of vandalism done to Dolores Cave. Right. I think that places like the cave, it's just that not a lot of people know about them. And, you know, it's a good way. It's a good thing in a way because it's just not going to get a lot of visitation.
Okay.
So that's kind of a good segue into your blog that you have, which is ikehikes.blogspot.com. So when you're writing these blogs, I know you have one on Dolores Cave. What is your hope with these blogs? You want people to visit them or just to know more about them?
I think it's... For me, I love hiking, obviously the name of the blog, and I've really always been really interested in local history and local archaeology, and I just want to, you know, as an amateur archaeologist, I just want to be able to share what I'm able to find out and what I know about these places, and I'm hoping that at least some people out there like to read them.
They're a great read. We will definitely need to link that in our podcast episode description because they're very informative.
Right.
Thank you.
So Ike, you've mentioned that you're pretty big into local history, big into hiking. You also work in the regional history room at the Central Library.
I do.
What kind of resources are down there that maybe tie into what we're talking about today?
There are a lot of the Colorado Archaeological Society puts out what's called the Southwestern Lore. And it's a journal of articles dealing with Colorado archaeology, and they contain a lot of really great resources.
So let's say that I'm visiting the Central Library and I want to go into the Regional History Room. And am I able to check out items?
That's a great question. You are not able to check out items from the Regional History Room, although you can use them in the library and make copies. In some cases, we might have circulating copies upstairs, but... you know, people can definitely use those items in the room.
And do you have times when you're in the regional history room?
Yeah. So it's typically, it's, this isn't always the case, but it's typically the most of the time it's Tuesdays from 3 to 4 and Fridays from 9 to 10 a.m.
And you're just there to help people with mm-hmm. their research needs?
Yep. Cool. If they'd like to learn more about what's in the room or just have questions.
Very cool.
Very good. Ike, thanks for coming on, man. This sure. is really interesting.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate the opportunity.
Before we sign off, if one thing that strikes me is if people are listening and they just can't make it down to the Central Library, but maybe they have internet access, what sorts of resources do we have available via our website that might be helpful?
You know, I've found the Colorado Historic Newspaper Collection to be a really great resource for local history, and also the Daily Sentinel Index, and both of those can be accessed via the library's e-resources page on the website.
Right on. Thanks, Ike.
Thank you, Ike.
Yeah, sure. Thanks.
This podcast is recorded at the 970 West Studio at the Central Library in downtown Grand Junction. Subscribe to the podcast and follow us on social media for library updates. For more information about the library, visit mesacountylibraries.org.